Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey everyone, welcome to a third shot podcast. Wait, what? No, it's not. It's hey everyone, welcome to DIY for Business. It's Russ and Greg with you. Greg, how's it going?
You made my day. It's going really well.
I know. I wanted to make you laugh a little bit at the start of this thing.
You know, I get to dance to the music, and now you start me off with one of your jokes. So, yeah.
I do want to ask, how's it going over there on Third Shot?
Is that what you want to ask me? You know, to speak of Third Shot, so everybody knows the two of us do a pickleball podcast called Third Shot Podcast, as well as DIY. And we've had some amazing guests on Third Shot Podcast. For people that are pickleballers, that also are business owners, check us out on Third Shot Podcast. We just had a guy that started his own company with red light therapy and laser treatment that you can have in your home. And I've been trying it out, and it's been doing wonders for my knee, my elbow, my shoulder. He came on. Next week's show is going to be the producers of Dream Breaker, A Pickleball Story, just shameless plug. The director is Larry David's wife. The producer and writer is Barbara Bush Jr.'s husband. Fantastic guests, put together a fantastic documentary. So go check out that show, get a chance.
All right. Well, so it comes out every Wednesday. That's been the plan for like, but you did take a couple of weeks off because your co-host got married.
And we'll be
married.
Coming out Thursdays, I think, moving forward.
Thursday. Thursdays. Okay. All right. So every Thursday, new episode. We've been doing something similar. We've been coming out every other like Monday, right? Like that's been the schedule for a while. And I realized when I was streaming something on some new show dropped, and I'm like, oh, got to watch all the episodes. And my wife and I will sit there and we will watch, you know, five episodes of a show. So I was like, wait, what if that would that work for podcasts? Like, why wait 2 weeks and launch up? Like, we'll have stuff in the can. So we're going to try something new for a couple of months. We'll see how this works and see what it does as far as, you know, feedback from people listening and also just looking at numbers and whatnot. But we'll drop like two or three episodes once a month. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, it makes sense, right? Today's culture, you know, with all the streaming out there, what do you do on a weekend, right? You sit and you just kind of watch a season of a show in one weekend or, right, you know, in 2 weekends. So you're used to doing the same show over and over and over again, where that used to be, you know, when sitcoms were a big deal, right? It was once a week, right? Must-see TV on Thursdays, right? Now everybody just kind of like, hey, let's just power through a whole season. So it makes sense in podcasting.
Yeah.
You know, give them three or four episodes. Let them listen to, you know, the different content. For us, is like different guests. So different topics in each episode. So it's not going to be monotonous listening to three or four in a row.
Right. Well, and you know, the other inspiration was I one of our podcasts, older podcasts, like from 3 years ago, came on, and I was listening to that in the car, and then I continued. I listened to like three of our episodes the other day. It was great.
Well, I do the same when I walk my dog, right? When I walk my dog, I do an extensive walk. Yeah. Maybe it's an hour or something like that. I usually get through one of our episodes, and it feeds me the second episode or, you know, another. And I just listen to it until I finally get home. Right. So yeah, makes sense. Do it. Let's, I think it's a great idea.
Well, we're experimenting. We'll see what happens, you know, and that, like, part of this too is, you know, the work at Beeswax and all the marketing stuff that I'm doing right now. We're testing out. I was doing some Google ads with a client. We have tried thing after thing after thing after thing. And then eventually we just decided to put out like a ton of content all at once and see what Google ads would do to that. And if it would show more, and also in search, and man, it killed it. It was like, it was our best month for it. So it's interesting to, you know, try those different things. I'm like, well, let's try something different with the podcast and see what happens. Always learning, right? Always trying something new.
People are going to binge listen to DIY for Business.
And this is a great one to start with Luke here. We've got Luke Lunkenheimer.
That's close enough. Lunkenheimer.
All right. What they're going to hear is four times of me pronouncing names wrong. That's when we send out these episodes.
I hope you can just keep Luke right.
Yeah. I will try. I will try. We'll just go with Luke for the rest of the episode. So, Luke, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, brother. Hey, guys. Glad to be here. Russ, Greg, thanks for having me. And to the listeners, man, I'm just a guy, Central New York native, small town guy, just trying to scratch and claw his way through business just like the rest of us.
Well, you've had an interesting background, Luke. I mean, before you kind of got into, and we will get into the business and what you're doing, mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your background that made it maybe even possibly more challenging to start your own business.
Are you talking about
I think it was probably both, right?
Well, I mean, if you're referring to the foot fungus I battled between ages of 8 and 10.
Brutal.
Or were you talking about the bank robbery? Which one did you want to start with?
You know, I was talking about the foot fungus, but since you brought up the bank robbery, you know, let's go for it.
Here I go being candid, talking myself right into a corner again. Yeah, Greg, listen, man, you know, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. I had always wanted to play college football, so I worked real hard at that, became a very good athlete. When I say very good, I didn't say great. I was Division II caliber, you know, country school, very small graduating class. To get a look from any school was pretty welcome at that time for us. But I had a strong look from a Division II school between my good grades and football. They had given me a scholarship, so I had a way out. You know, it was kind of that, you ever see that movie Varsity Blues, that MTV movie where, you know, West Cannon, Texas, right? Yeah. The way out of town is a ticket to go to college and try to break out. And that's kind of what I had. Cato, New York was a very similar town, very different climate, and certainly not as many good-looking blondes and Daisy Dukes, but we were a big football town. So I had the scholarship, secured it. Because we were a small school, I played both sides of the ball on a defensive play, terribly injured my shoulder, which was my throwing arm, which quarterback was the position I'd been recruited for, and lost the scholarship. So that led to, you know, a very common tale that you hear with young athletes. It led to trying to get it fixed with a surgery not going well, ending up having to come to terms or come to grips with the fact that I was not going to be a quarterback and I wasn't going to get a scholarship. And I, you know, all those things were gone. So there's some depression that comes with that. And when the surgeon says, "Hey man, are you in a lot of pain?" It's 2002 before the I-STOP legislation, where they're still liberally handing out Oxycontin and gives you bottles and bottles of painkillers. You come from a lineage of people with addiction issues, and you learn very quickly that it's a genetic thing, you know? So that crept up on me, and I spent probably the better part of a decade chasing that addiction, fighting it, you know, always in sales, always productive, always able to make, you know, low six figure to mid six figure income, but never having anything to show for it. No progress to speak of. And then, you know, right before my 30th birthday, I just kind of had enough, and I subconsciously decided to, you know, put some sort of a fulcrum into my life and either go one way or the other. So I robbed a bank. It was a very, you know, people ask me if it was something that was premeditated. That day, no. You know, I always kind of thought it was sexy, the movies where the people rob banks and the getaway cars, you know, so that always lives in the back of your head. But strung out on opiates at 187 pounds, 6'4", and your girlfriend's Taurus missing a hubcap, it's not exactly like the town with Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner. So it was on the spot decision. You know, I can tell you consciously, I just wanted money and drugs. Subconsciously, I was looking for a way out. And I think I knew that if I got caught up, that I'd go to prison and control would be taken from me, because I had a very difficult time kicking that addiction. Anybody that's ever suffered with opiate addiction can tell you it's a very physical thing. So that was a turning point. That's when everything kind of came to a head. I went away. The world forgot about me for for a year or two, and I did my debt to society. And I can tell you that the New York State correction system, you know, doesn't have a great track record as far as recidivism, but I was corrected. I didn't want any part of that. So I made some changes moving forward and started the entrepreneurial climb after that.
I think it's fascinating that you can rob a bank and only get 2 years.
I think it's fascinating too. You know, in New York State, they give you an indeterminate sentence, which is a 1 to 3. And you can serve as little as 10 months. You can serve as much as all three. Between county and state time for that particular crime, it was 1 month shy of 2 years. But believe it or not, on that actual charge and that actual sentence, it was only just shy of a year, 11 months and change.
Wow. So,
now, I had also elected to go into a shock incarceration correction program, which basically said if you were willing to go have a drill instructor scream in your ear and wake up at 5 a.m. and run 10 miles a day and be at the whim of the correction system for 6 months in North Moriah, New York, which is about negative 12 degrees at all times, then they would knock some off your sentence if you did it successfully. And, you know, I was, straight-laced upbringing. You know, I was brought up in a home that was not military, but, you know, we certainly respected the military. I had uncles that were in the military, you know, uncles and cousins in law enforcement. So, you know, I knew how to take authority. I knew how to fall in line when the time was right. And, you know, it was that part of my upbringing that helped me do very well there.
So you get out. How did you go how did you start from zero? Like, you know, after your
release? Yeah, that's a great question, man. You know, and when I do interviews like this, I try to remember, you know, what's the listener thinking? Where's their head at? And, you know, most people go, okay, well, successful businessman, but you were in jail and you were hooked on drugs. How do you get from A to Z, right? And everybody always says, you know, I ran into some good circumstances, met some good people, but it's like, no, they need help. They need every rung on the ladder. Like, what steps were taken? I can tell you primarily, my first and foremost was just work ethic. I have to go to work. I have to work a 9-to-5 job. I have to contribute to society again. I have to pay taxes. I have to follow the rules. I have to get myself lodging, a driver's license again, a vehicle, like very, very back to the basics. Once I secured the basics, it was then, okay, highest and best use, where I don't have a college degree. I don't have a significant breadth of experience in any particular skill. You know, I have to do what I know I'm good at. And I knew I was good at selling cars. So I entered back into not necessarily car sales, but the aftermarket end of the automobile industry, selling rust proofing and paint protection films and stuff like that. And I can tell you, you know, not to sound prophetic, but if somebody out there is maybe looking on how to climb the entrepreneurial ladder or become more successful in business, and maybe they haven't actually jumped in and taken the leap yet, success likes success. So when you're working for somebody and you are just ravenous in your work ethic, you're a half hour early, you're the last to leave, you're working your rear end off, and you're just, it's obvious that you're after success and that everything else comes second and that you're willing to do whatever it takes to be the best and succeed. And you're also humble and willing to learn. People notice. And the owner of the company that I was working for had, you know, heard that I'd been involved in the car business, that I had had some entrepreneurial efforts in the car business that went well at times, you know, when I was sober in my better moments. And he actually approached me, came up to me one day after work and said, listen, I think you're bigger than this. You know, I watch you work. I watch how you speak to customers. I think there's something within you that we need to cultivate. So would you be interested in starting a business, partnering, an investment, you know, so on and so forth. And that was the birth of my entrepreneurship is, you know, somebody came to me. I could tell you, you know, if some years had passed and I'd rebuilt my credit and I had some steaks in the freezer, it's certainly a path I would have probably tried to walk on my own. But I am a prime example of success breeds success, meaning when somebody has reached a high level of success or has wealth or has influence, they want to bring up others. You know, they see other people that have potential and they see something kind of, you know, I don't want to sound cliche, but they see a little bit of themselves in somebody and say, man, I see where you're at. I see what you're capable of. I was there. I just needed this little bit of assistance to get me to the next level. And once somebody opened the curtain and showed me, I was off to the races. you know, when somebody spots that in you, generally that opportunity will present itself. And there's many, many more stories like that across the landscape of success and entrepreneurship and you know, business ownership. And I just hope that resonates with somebody, because you never know who's watching. You know, just work your butt off, do the right thing, and continually try to hone your skills and get better. Someone will take notice.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, you hear that story of people that are willing to make that commitment, willing to go through the grind and, you know, try to get and stand out based on their performance, based on their work ethic. And there's so many people out there that have a tough time, even with that, to get noticed. Like, what advice would you provide somebody to kind of like, you know, maybe just put a little more spotlight on themselves so that, you know, the people that are willing to invest and want to kind of take somebody under their wings so that they get noticed more often for all that hard work?
Yeah. So I can tell you, pretty much full stop, that the people that would step forward and say, hey man, I've been working my butt off and doing this, now I'm just not getting noticed. What's your advice for me? My advice is sit back down, go back to work. You haven't done anywhere near what you thought you've done. Okay. I'm talking years worth of hard work and discipline in producing millions and millions.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Millions and millions in sales for somebody, and then for them to say then, okay, you know, and this again, just to, for clarity, this was a second bout of working for this guy. I had worked my butt off for him. When I got out of prison, I was offered the job back. And when I went back and he saw with a sober mind and a sober lifestyle that I was able to produce even better, it was like, okay, now the door is open. So what I'm saying here is, you know, everybody wants instant gratification. When you can go to ChatGPT and say, write me out a business model for this business with this type of marketing budget for this time frame, and the next thing you know, it just gives it to you. Or you go into McDonald's and say, cheeseburger now, and you hand over $5 and you get a burger. Everybody's so used to things coming instantly, right? And they think that, well, if I just go in this place and I just work my tail off. So what you find people do is you look and they're like, dude, for like 10 days straight, I've been staying late and sweeping the floor. It's like, okay, bro, come back and talk to me in 10 months, okay? Like, the entrepreneur or the CEO or the visionary or the owner, they got better stuff to worry about, okay? They're not looking for the next pupil who they're going to bring up through the ranks. It's when that individual is relentless and they cannot help but notice this individual, that's when it comes. And the funny part is, the people who get noticed are generally the ones who are not trying to get noticed. They're just doing what they do. And that genuine work ethic and that authentic, just hard-nosed, will not fail, that's what's spotted by the entrepreneur, because they say, you know, that's somebody who could make it. The person who's got one, you know, looking out of the corner of their eye, over their shoulder, sweeping faster when the boss walks through, that's so blatantly obvious, those people just don't get there. So commit to the purpose and commit to doing it relentlessly and endlessly. And, you know, the problem is they say, okay, well then when's it going to happen? You're not going to know. Okay. But if you hear enough people saying what I'm saying, which there's plenty of them out there, I promise you the time comes. Even if it's, you know, there's stories about Ray Kroc walking into a competitor's restaurant and seeing somebody and say, oh, that's our next, you know, manager of this region, grab them. And it wasn't even their boss that saw the efforts, but entrepreneurs take notice. They're a very small percentage of the population, and successful high dollar people no talent when they see it. And the other thing is too, this is, you know, not a lot of people are going to want to hear this, Greg, but if you're not that guy or girl, you might not get noticed. You know, you have to understand that not everybody's built for that. So, you know, if it's been a year or so and you're still not getting any results, then you may want to consider alternatives.
You know, you're talking about the the protective of the employee, but also the employer, the entrepreneur, right? Like, it's a grind. Like, you're not going to get success right away. Most of the time, right? Like, when I started a little side business, this little thing that I put together for events. And, it was a website. I'm looking at the Google Analytics every month for like month after month after month. And it's like, is it just me visiting this site? Like, what the heck?
When's it going to break?
And so it took like 9 months before it actually started to, you know, do anything. And it's like, I guess whether you're coming back and, you know, having to prove yourself by, you know, sweeping the floors and doing the extra things and doing all these other things, or you're just in your own, like, you know, entrepreneurship mind, starting your own business. Like, how do you, what do you say to somebody to kind of keep them motivated so that, you know, they can turn that kind of that hunger into, you know, like something that they can actually get done. Like when they're still seeing, like, they're being kicked down by numbers coming in or, you know, whatever. Sure.
So I can tell you that if those things bother you, if watching a recorded misstep or downturn or, you know, a problem or adversity, if that affects you deeply and gets you to the cusp of quitting, you know, you may not be built for this, right? You know, a lot of people want to hear all the things they want to hear. They want to hear me come on here and say, oh man, you just got to persevere, or all you this or all you that. The reality is, business ownership is, there's a reason that, you know, 5% of all businesses, or only 5% of businesses and startups make it. And then again, you know, 1.7, whatever the statistic is, don't quote me because I'm not read into it, but it's very small, that are actually profitable and move on to make profit and a lifestyle for that individual. There's a reason for that. It's because the amount of adversity that you will encounter and the amount of adjustments that you will need to make. For instance, my sales training company, Paid to Persuade, we went into this like, we're going to go save the salespeople of the world. We're going to go help people. We're going to go sell our product to people. We're going to do it at a low barrier for entry financially. And we're just going to help people. Okay. And then you realize, okay, well, salespeople that aren't successful are cheap. They don't generally want to be helped. They're not willing to invest in themselves. That, you know, so we had to make a pivot, and it's okay. It's a little higher ticket item to people that are already having some success that want to get elite level. And then bam, it's like, okay, those guys, they want help. They're willing to pay. But then a step further, all the employees of the people that we're helping are reaching out to us saying, hey, can we hire you to come train? And we've completely shifted to a B2B model. So we started out with a business plan to serve society and to serve consumers and in the workforce. And we've adjusted to a massive windfall in positive revenue to a B2B company. And that's because, you know, instead of being so committed to what you want, you're committed to the end result and the outcome and what you're hoping to accomplish. And you have to be willing to pivot. And you have to realize not everything's going to go your way, right? So to stare at a blank screen month after month after month and simply go when it's going to break, well, it may not break, number one. And number two, you know, what do? You realize that, you know, let me put it this way. A failure is only a failure when you stop trying. You know, I'm sure there's a bumper sticker or scripture somewhere that you know emulates that statement, but that's the reality of it. Okay, if you talk to a guy and he's like, "Yep, I've been training, you know, to play professional barroom pool for 8 years now, and I think I'm close to getting my pro card." It's like, regardless of how crazy you may think that guy is, you say, "Well, he has not failed. He's still going. He still may do it, right?" And if the guy dies before he does it, he didn't fail. He was en route to the goal, right? The problem is too many people want the success now, and they're not willing to just come to terms with the fact that this may be a very long journey, right? So here's what I can tell you. Be constantly aware of things that are evolving and changing around you. Make sure, compare yourself to the ones that are succeeding and saying, am I doing something vastly different? Okay, is that desire to do different, is that a selfish desire? Am I trying to reinvent the wheel for me, or am I trying to reinvent the wheel because that's the most valuable thing to the marketplace, right? And at the end of the day, if you take kind of that Jeff Bezos mindset and you say, I'm just here to tenaciously satisfy the consumer. Whoever is on the receiving end of the service or the product I offer, I'm just out to help them. And when that becomes your primary goal, you pivot accordingly, because you may, you know, and humility, right? Talk to people. Bring your product samples to people. Bring your service to people. Give your service away to some people. Was that helpful to you? What was the best part of it? Do you think I could improve? Like, humility and serving the consumer, if you can pivot based upon those two things, you will very rarely ever fail. But, you know, best advice to somebody looking to persevere and get better, you know, make adjustments and understand it's going to be a long ride. But when it hits, man, it changes your life forever.
Totally. Totally. Well, so, you know, as you were talking, I was going back to when, you know, I did radio sales for a little while, you know, and I did pretty well. I did good. I started a business while I was doing the radio sales. I started making more money on the business than I was, because they were, you know, like shifting commissions and all this stuff. So, like, I may as well just shift over to the business and leave sales and just do this. And then, you know, of course, there was just scariness, right, of making that leap and whatnot. But I kind of pulled in like my same rationale for sales, which was like, I was probably afraid of zero. Sure. You know, like, I was afraid of not seeing, like, oh, zero calls today. I can't do that. I have to make calls, because I just, you know, and I knew, like, I think I've said this before on the podcast, I used to keep track of the no's, not the yeses. Like, cause I knew that if I got, you know, okay, I've got 10 no's already, this 11th one is very likely going to be a yes at this point. You know, so like I did all of those things where I was like kind of afraid of, I used my fear of failure, I guess, to push through on sales. And that helped, you know, with the business as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. And fear is one hell of a motivator, especially when on the other side of fear is losing your apartment or your car or your girlfriend. Like, it's a great motivator.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Let's talk a little bit about Paid to Persuade. You know, you kind of switched and pivoted who you go after and who attends these. Talk a little bit about the curriculum and what do people learn? Because obviously you're a fantastic communicator. You're very passionate. You get your thoughts out extremely clearly. I'm sure that's part of the curriculum, but what else do people learn when they go through this course?
I appreciate the question, Greg. And the reason that I'm such an effective communicator is because I'm unapologetically me, right? I don't put on a game face. When we were talking, you know, just before the show for a few moments, it wasn't like, all right, guys. All right. Yeah. Let me know when we're going. Hey, Russ. Hey, Greg. Hey, great to be here. Yeah. Luke back here for another episode of DIY. You know, it's not like that. It's I am unapologetically and authentically myself. I think that a lot of people need to focus on that in sales and really welcome that into their career and their existence, that authenticity is the single most important factor in communication, right? There's mirror neurons, there's empathy center, there's all, we can get into the science and the minutia of why a human being wants to be communicated with authentically, but you know, there exists this, you know, you asked kind of a multifaceted question there. Now, the pivot as far as going from B2C to B2B and all that stuff, that's on the marketing end. We absolutely service business to client relationships. So we will absolutely take on single solitary salespeople. We have many programs for that. And we have a very, very, you know, and I don't sound arrogant, but we have an extremely high success and retention rate. Not just better than what I would call my competitor. Like, we're just not even in the same ballpark. Okay. Our entry level, as far as what it costs and the outcome that our trainees get for that, it's irrefutable. I believe this company will grow quite a bit in the near future. And it's because it's a results driven company. We're the only sales training company that has a money back guarantee. Like, if we don't increase your, like, if you're an individual and we don't get you at least a 20% increase, we give you all your money back. Right. So, and that's based in how we train, to your point, to your question. Okay. So first of all, in our sales training, you don't just enter the Paid to Persuade ecosystem. You don't step onto our terrain and learn our sales, right? You have to go through a very diverse and very detailed mindset course and training, lifestyle and mindset training. It's kind of like going up to a whiteboard and there's all sorts of little nicks and you know, marker marks and eraser mark all over it, and then trying to write and to draw a beautiful picture, right? You first got to clean that whiteboard off. You got to start with shiny, clean, white surface. So only what you're putting on that whiteboard is what's received and what's iterated upon on a daily basis. There is so much nonsense that not even veteran salespeople, but just people who've never done sales, and you ask them, okay, what do you think sales is? Well, sales is getting people to like me. We get that answer a lot. It's building rapport, getting a customer to like you, and then selling a product or service. Like, okay, cool. What do you think sales is? Sales is very clearly and definitively articulating the value proposition. I mean, they come up with all how verbose people get when you ask them to describe what they believe sales is. It can almost be comical sometimes, okay? And then I say, okay, are you guys ready to find out what sales is? You ready for the big reveal? Yes. Okay. It's interrogation. It's just compassionate interrogation. That's all it is. Okay. When you understand that 90% of the people that enter your sphere, whether you enter their property, they enter your brick and mortar establishment, you guys engage in a phone call, whatever that is, aside from an absolutely cold contact, which the same holds true once you get past kind of the icebreaker conversation, that individual, the person that you're speaking with, has 90% chance that they've made a buying decision on the product that you're going to offer them or the service that you're going to offer them from square one. Meaning, you're a furniture salesperson. The family walks into your furniture store. They've already decided they're buying furniture, okay? Where they're going to buy it, what color, pattern, and size, and bedrooms, and so on and so forth they're going to buy, you know, whether they're going to finance or pay cash. These are all, this is, you know, the details that need to be articulated and figured out. But the point I'm trying to make here is a sale is most often the salesperson's sale to lose, okay? And again, we're not talking about product-specific things, length of warranty, that kind of stuff. You got to know your product. But people go into a sales conversation thinking, well, I've got to convince this person to buy my product or service, and I have to do so based upon the features of the product or service that I offer. When in all reality, man, when people just understand that the salespeople that train with us, they undergo this revelation. And it's different when it happens for everybody. Some people it happens in a week. Some people it takes 6 months to get there. But once that switch kind of flips in them, and they understand that what they need to do is so far different and far removed from what they thought they needed to do, it becomes so much easier for them. And to the people listening, I would tell you, just as kind of a crash course 101, your job is not to talk about how nice and sweet and shiny your product is and convince them it's the product for them and tell them all the benefits going to help them within their life. It's not the case at all, okay? You could sell 27 benefits of a 28 benefit product to your customer. But if you miss on the one benefit that they actually care about, you're not going to get the deal. Meanwhile, if you'd have spent the time to converse and compassionately interrogate the customer and find out all the driving factors that brought them into your world in the first place, and you discover, well, very simple. Their uncle just died. He had a chair that looked just like this. They want to remember him. So as long as you have a wicker rocking chair and this finish, that's all they're looking for. Okay. Meanwhile, you showed them all the adjustable bases. You showed them the bedroom sets. You showed them all the mattresses, had them lay test every single one of them. In all reality, there was one scratch and dent rocking chair over in the corner that you could have sold in the first 5 minutes of your conversation and moved on. But instead, you spent 3 hours showing seven master bedroom sets to a customer that didn't end up buying because you didn't have what they're looking for. Right. Now, that's obviously it's an uncharacteristic example, but it paints a very clear and vivid picture for the listener that you can absolutely miss on what's important, but still do a great job with product presentation and not make a dime. So I would tell you in a nutshell, we absolutely realign the thinking of the salesperson and have them going after a completely different result than they start with in the first place.
Yeah. So, you know, I wrote it down. You call it compassionate interrogation.
Yes, sir.
I call it asking good questions, right? Mm-hmm. I'm guessing a similar concept.
The difference would be compassionate interrogation is the questions that I'm asking you are simply questions about your interest, your concern, that they all benefit you, okay? Asking good questions yes, I agree with you. It's a similar thing. You know, when you say ask good questions, I might ask a good question and that moves the sale forward for me. A compassionate interrogation question is a question that, hey, I want to help you. You know, is this going to help you? Do you need one of these? How do you like this? What's your experience been with those? Is there anything we should stay away from? They're customer-centric questions, just for clarity.
Yeah, that was where I was going to go with this. It's like, do you put together kind of a series of, you know, those types of questions for your, you know, for people that go through your course so that they kind of have a starting point of how do they customize those types of questions for whatever they're selling?
So you said a beautiful word, and the word is customize, okay? what lives in the world of sales today that is the bane of the existence of sales training are scripts and word tracks. Okay. Now I want to clarify here. If someone is absolutely brand new and they're doing a cold outreach phone call, a script can be helpful. Okay. But if you are an established salesperson and you've closed a few deals with your particular offer or product, a script should be nowhere near your toolbox. Okay. And the reason for it is the following. There have been many, many yards and yards of research done around this. Okay. And the statistic, the number ranges anywhere from 72 to 80 something percent. When an individual is reading from a script, whether they think they are or not, there is a certain robotic cadence to their voice that is picked up on by the customer, and they will disengage it. The aggregate average that I've discovered is, and it's generally aligns with Forrester research, is 77%. And that doesn't mean that they'll become 33% less interested, or excuse me, 23% less interested. It means, excuse me, that 77% of the people are just going to disengage entirely. They'll let you finish your conversation, but at that point, when they feel that someone is scripted or robotic, they'll just disengage. They're not hearing what you have to say. So absolutely, you do need something to go off of, right? Otherwise, how would you say, I'm going to train you on how to sell? You got to know what to do, right? But the most important part of that, Greg, is the word that you said. I believe you said customized or unique. And that is, it has to be their own, okay? We teach a framework, okay? For instance, I don't say, okay, walk over to that block, take four steps to the intersection, look both ways, take the other four steps and cross, then step up on the curb, turn around, look back at me, wave and say, I did it. I just say, hey, you got to get over there. However you would get over there, if you would jaywalk, if you would hop in a car, drive to the end of the road, turn around, like however you need to get there that appears authentically you, just go do that thing, but meet me over there, okay? So we teach a framework, and it is a framework of what you need to discover. It's a discovery framework, what you need to unearth and cultivate from the customer. And it's not say this, and if they say this, you say that. You have to be conversational. Sales must be conversational, okay? I have seen salespeople that we have trained that are terrible. I don't want to say terrible communicators, but they're just, I mean, they've got a terrible voice. Their vocal cadence is horrible. Their vocabulary is garbage, okay? But they're, hey, hi guys, how are you? Good. Hey, welcome in. What's we trying to do today? We're looking for, a new pickup truck. Gotcha. Well, what brought y'all out here? What's got you coming over to get bothered by the guy in the suspenders, huh? Don't mind me. I'm just a little chubby. Too many donuts over there. And you're like smacking your forehead like, bro, you sound like every cigar chewing used car salesman in the world. But I listened to him at the desk with his manager. That's who he is. I listened to him at the water cooler. That's who he is. I listened to him talk to his wife. That's who he is. So he's selling exactly as he should be selling, because the customer subconsciously picks up on when you're trying to be something you're not, right? There's all these social media sales guru guys, and they've got millions of followers. And it's so tragic, because the general populace does not understand that those are paid for, okay? That when you put out an entertaining or a controversial post and you pump hundreds of thousands of dollars behind it, everybody's going to like it, click on it, follow it. Like it's bought and paid for, right? And I'm not throwing any shade on these guys. They're very successful. They've made a lot of money, but it's not sales, right? Sales is not, well, Mr. Jones, isn't anything worth doing tomorrow worth doing today? Well, no. Crickets, tumbleweed, the sound of the cool breeze floating. Like, what do we do now, right? So that script-based selling is just, so to answer your question, I know I kind of went off on a tangent there, but you must be authentic. So we teach a framework that helps you navigate the sale, not having to remember words, not having to remember, well, what do I do at this point? It's just like, okay, all right, I got to find out what brought them here today. Like, what was the precursor? Why did they come? Okay. And it's not, what brought you here today? Oh, I'm looking for a pickup truck. Okay, great. What color? No. Like, obviously, Mr. Customer, we're a car dealership. Like, you came here looking for a vehicle. I just, more importantly, did you crash your car and you need a new one? Or did your car break down? It's time to replace it. Did you have a baby? Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah. No, we're trading the old one. We got to get a new one. We get a new one every 3 years. Oh, okay. Just in that moment, the amount of discovery that you've done, you get a new one every 3 years. Yes. They're likely good credit. Okay. Interesting. So you're familiar with the brand? Yep. We always buy Toyota. Okay. They're brand loyal. They're captive audience. Okay. And the one you've got now, is that something that we're going to need to, pay off the balance on? Or nope, bought and paid for. I pay for cash. Oh, got equity. Like, off that one question, you can go into all the minutia. And by the time you get done branching off that one question, and the best part about it, Greg, with compassionate interrogation, it's their answer. So when you ask them to continue to iterate upon their answer and the things that are meaningful to their life, they're happy to give you that, okay? One of the things we teach in Paid to Persuade is the elements of the human condition that are relevant to sales. And one of them that's incredibly important is people love to talk about themselves. So if you ever get stuck in a sale, it's like, listen, your safety valve, just get them talking about themselves. Just ask them a question.
Yep.
Notice the bumper sticker in the back window. Look at the logo on their shirt. A smell that you smelled. Ask them if they smelled it and tell them what it reminds you of. What does it remind you of? Like, that is a safety valve. There's so many things we teach that become like pocket knife, hip shot, quick, easy access ways out of a stall in a sale. We give salespeople the ability to just be themselves, to just navigate the sale comfortably. When somebody trains with P2P and they meet the customer, there's no, oh boy, here we go. Oh man, I'm a little nervous. I don't know how this one's going to go. It's like, no, we're cool. I'm equipped with everything I need to handle this conversation. It's just, excuse me, are you a human? Yep. Okay, I'm good. Because if you're a human being and you've got a brain, I know how to navigate this conversation. I know how to get where I need to go. And it's mutual alignment of goals. When the salesperson's goal is to serve the customer and get the customer where they already want to go, you'd be amazed how much easier it is to sell somebody.
Oh, totally. So, and when you're being yourself, like you're being authentic, like you said, right? Like you put on a mask and you're just pretending to be something else. You're not going to have confidence. You're not going to know what to say next. You're going to be like stumbling through things. You're not going to be able to. But when you have that authenticity and you ask the right questions and you're actually paying attention, like it's such an easy win. I had a client one time, like literally we would just talk about all kinds of like his vacation that he's planning, the car that he just bought. And then, you know, 30 minutes later, the appointment's almost over. And he's like, oh yeah, let me sign that contract. I mean, that was it. Like he would literally just download his stuff and then
brother, that's selling 101. That's selling 101. Okay. And that has to do with free dopamine recognition and response. Right. So when that guy got talking and he got the other guy talking, the free dopamine level in that individual. And when you learn how to, you know, coming from a former addict to the rest of the world, dopamine is an incredibly powerful chemical. So when you know how to recruit and manipulate dopamine in your customer, it's almost like a superhuman advantage. It's actually very unfair. That's why we make people take a lifestyle mindset and ethics training before they get into this, because Paid to Persuade is so powerful in your ability to manipulate your customer, of course, to a morally sound end. And that's what we train. That's why we do it the way we do it. But it becomes almost scary that when we get done training salespeople, after a few months, they return and they're like, man, I've kind of had to adjust my life a little bit because I can talk my wife into doing anything. I can talk my boss into giving me anything, and I can talk my customer into doing anything. I've actually had to fire salespeople at my car dealerships. I own three. I've had to fire salespeople because they gross the customer too much. You know, and you find out who the unethical scumbags are when you give them, you know, you got $12,500 gross. The average gross in the car business is like $1,800 to $2,200. Okay. Our average is above three. You got guys that are averaging $5,000 and $6,000 grosses. You start looking at the metrics and you're like, right, you sold them a warranty for $7,600. It's a $4,000 warranty. And then I'm cutting a refund check. The customer's happier than hell to get this letter in the mail from the company. But then it's like, why did you do this? Well, dude, I could talk him into anything. I got him, you know, they use the framework in a nefarious way. And that's why we are very cautious in our approach with people. And quite frankly, that's why people get so excited about P2P when they speak to a trainee, because they're so enthusiastic. Like, dude, you don't understand. This is it. Like, I've done 10 different sales trainings before. I've paid a collective $25,000 over the past 4 years for sales training resources. This is the one. And then we meet them and it's like, okay, slow down. Calm down. You're not getting the keys to the kingdom that quick. We got to figure out who you are first. So go ahead, Greg.
I've just been so impressed with the conversation. I've made a bunch of notes that I took away, and we just talked for 45 minutes, right? So, you know, for business owners that want to get their sales team through P2P, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
paytopersuade.com, brother. And for the people listening, we give free, tangible, you know, no questions asked, no call to action, just good, tangible, actionable sales advice on our social media channels, which is just at Luke Lunk, L-U-K-E-L-U-N-K on all platforms. YouTube, Paid to Persuade. We throw a lot of free content up there. But if they're looking to, you know, to really get sharp and they want to train with us, it's paid2persuade.com. And I appreciate that.
Absolutely. You should have told Russ at the beginning you go by Luke Lunk. He could have figured that one out.
I couldn't let him off that easy.
Yeah. Oh, man. I at some point, I am going to learn how to pronounce names. That'll happen at some point doing the podcast. We'll see. Hey, thanks, Luke, so much. I mean, I really appreciate it because, I mean, I feel like, you know, sales for a small business owner just starting out that is trying to do sales, many people, I think, they just think they got to put on a mask. They got to be this role. They got to play the salesperson. But no, they just got to be themselves. Just be authentic. And I love that message that you're putting that out there. And your program sounds awesome. So
I appreciate that, brother.
Hopefully we get some signups for that.
And just one quick thing off of what you just said there. There's something we teach called perspective over perception. And it just simply reminds you to always look at things through a different lens, the lens of your consumer. And if you simply look back and say, okay, the last time I went somewhere and bought something or someone came and knocked my door and I bought something, was I impressed by the overly verbose, fresh haircut having starched guy that sounded like the late night FM DJ announcing the game at Fenway, selling me the product with all the features in it? It's like, no, you bought from the person you had a conversation with who felt trustworthy, who you felt was giving it to you straight because you already planned on buying anyways, and all they did was just gently tap the door open for you to walk through because you already planned on going there. And when you start looking at sales and framing it that way, Life becomes a hell of a lot easier.
Totally. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate you guys having me. Absolutely, it was a blast, guys. I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening, subscribing, and reviewing DIY for Business. The subjects that we cover on this podcast are selected with the goal of helping your business grow. All of the information provided is opinion-based, and you might want to consult a professional to discuss your exact business situation. God, I say this so quick. See, this is robotic talk that you're talking about. Greg, I want your company to succeed, and we're happy to take your questions. We'd also love to hear your suggestions for future episodes. Just head over to DIYForBusinessPodcast.com. The link's in the podcast description. But guess what? Because of the way that we're launching these episodes, you're going to hear a new one right now. So hopefully just, you know, subscribe.
Let's
go. Check it out. We thank you again for listening and subscribing to DIY for Business, where you are not alone.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.